This is the Taser update for October 30th, 2016. I'm Philippe Odenoff.
I'm Patrick Mifflin.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
And I'm Chris Sologi.
Now, we got a few very interesting stories to talk about this week. One of them that we're really not going to talk about is the implosion at Hello Games, because I have no idea what is going on over there right now. So once we get more details on that, we'll probably be discussing it at length. But for now, it's just left us scratching our heads, wondering what is Sean Murray thinking.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. But before we get to all of that, we should probably talk a little bit about what we've been playing this week. Because for some of us, it's been eventful. For some of us, not so much. I'm in the not so much case, where I've been basically just playing Rock Band Rivals, and that's it. So don't really have much to report here. How about you, Ben?
I'm still on Heaven's Ward. It's kind of, I'm passively observing the effects of unemployment on my gaming habits, and I didn't realize, for one thing, how far I'd gotten away from binge gaming in the true sense, and how much I missed it. So, wherever I end up now, it's going to be a day shift.
Yeah.
Which in some way I think is going to lend itself better to those types of gaming habits. Just generally speaking, because working overnight shifts like I was doing for so many years, I wasn't really around much when the other people I gamed with were. So that's something I'm enjoying right now and look forward to continuing to do in the future.
Yeah.
Do
you find you jump around a lot, or do you kind of stick to one game?
Right now, I'm pretty heavily focused.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's going to stick long term. I'm just enjoying it for what it is right now.
Yeah.
Did some lab work in KOF,
and
this time it was Geese that I leveled up on. So. Obviously, I wasn't on the Let's Weekend podcast this week because I was at a Ranbat, and the results are showing. I'm quite pleased with my progress.
Yeah.
So, how about you, Brandon?
I finished Guilty Gear. Yep. And I finally got enough points to finally unlock Senkisk, and let's just say, after playing his thing in the arcade, I understand why they had to lock him behind that wall, because he is a real beast. he has this one sort of particular charge move that he uses. It's basically, you know, because the thing is, you have to remember, is Sen's weapon is a flag,
yeah,
basically. And he has this one move where he can, you know, basically thrust that flag out, you know, and if you charge it up enough, it'll take out a good chunk of your health bar. But see, the thing is, once he does that, you can also keep hitting, you know, the attack button, and it'll go out like a, you know, like Chun-Li's flash kick. You can just kind of spam it over and over again, which takes off even more of your... of the health bar. Also, he's got a an over the head smash move that takes up about a good 2/3 of the screen.
Kind of hard to avoid.
Yeah, of course his he does have a one major flaw, which is that in order to keep his keep him going, he has to be, you know, he has to have food. He has a hunger meter, and you have to sometimes recharge it every so often, because if you don't and you try to do one of these big special moves, and, you know, his hunger meter is empty, it will basically require him to, you know, he'll have to recover for a few extra seconds. And anybody who's ever played fighting games know it only takes a few extra seconds.
And does he, like, flat out just chow down in the middle of a match when you're trying to recharge that thing?
He whips out one of those anime cartoon things of roast beef on a bone and bites into it.
It was either going to be that or a meat bun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, as long as he doesn't find it in a trash can, it's okay.
Mm. I think he just whips it out of his pocket. I'm not sure.
I'm not sure that's
you gotta remember, technically. You got to remember that technically Sankisk is only 10 years old.
Mm.
Yeah.
But remember, he's like a third gear, so.
Yeah.
He ages quickly.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I've got that, and I'm probably going to use that and combine it up some other stuff so I can get credit so I can go and get Revelator at GameStop. Yeah. And I don't, you know, I don't plan on getting any of the DLC characters because, you know, they're already all on Revelator. Yeah. So, so there's that. And I also got and have been enjoying Battlefield 1.
Yeah.
Yeah, the hype is real.
Is there a single player campaign to speak of in this game? Or?
Yes, there is, and it's actually really good.
Hmm.
It's not particularly long,
yeah,
which is my one and only complaint about it. But what they did is, instead of trying to make like one epic movie length, you know, story like they've done with all the past Battlefields, what they did is. They divided it up into five individual stories of five individual people on different parts of the war. Okay. So, like, when you start out, the very first thing when you start out, which sort of more or less acts as your tutorial, you're basically playing a member of the Harlem Hellfighters in, I think it was France.
Yeah.
Fighting, you know, in the American Trench. And that's basically how the game begins. And then after that, you've got five individual stories that you can go in and out of at will.
Okay.
So, like, one of the guys that you like when you like when I started, I played an English army guy who is responsible for driving a tank.
Yeah.
A Mark V. Or is it a Mark V? I can't remember.
I think it's Mark V.
Mark V. And then there's like another one where you play an American gambler dude who impersonates a guy named George Rackham so he can steal his plane. And that's the plane base. And then there's like another one where you play an Italian guy who's a member of the Arditi, which is their elite shock troops.
Yeah.
Which was, you know, it's neat stuff. I highly recommend it.
So each of the characters is basically like a different perspective
on the war, on all different sides, which makes sense because, let's face it, there wasn't really any good guy or bad guy in that war.
No, it was a clusterfuck. It was.
Yeah. So. In fact, that's basically when you begin the game, that's basically what the introduction says in text. This game takes place, you know, Battlefield 1 portrays events that took place over 100 years ago. Every nation in the war was in the world was involved in this war, and it changed nothing. That's...
yeah.
And I saw that intro sort of mission is all about, oh, your guy died, we'll put you in another guy. Just showing you like the futility of this war.
Yeah.
Yeah, the game literally tells you at that segment, it says, you're about to be involved in frontline warfare, you were not expected to survive.
Mm.
Just straight up tells you,
yeah,
you're going to die.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, and I mean, this game basically involves every aspect of World War One you can think of. Yes, you're in the air, you're also on the water. We're talking trench warfare, mustard gas, tank warfare. Yeah, it's just, it is probably the most visceral and most gruesome Battlefield game that you will ever play.
Yeah.
And for a good reason. The First World War was an unusually gruesome war.
Yeah.
And the fact that it involved so many sides, none of which had really the moral high ground.
Yeah.
So that's what I've been playing. What about you, Chris?
So I decided to get into Elder Scrolls Online with the big One Tamriel update they put out a couple weeks ago. And I haven't really been able to explore that aspect of the game as much just out of the intro. You're kind of more wanting to take the guided experience over just wandering around aimlessly.
Yeah.
That game still is pretty good. It definitely seems like they're making things better. So one of the problems I have with it so far is just the... They don't make it easy to get into the crafting and alchemy stuff early on. A lot of it is sort of hampered by, I need the base materials to refine them, then get the knowledge to be able to actually make certain things.
Yeah.
And getting that knowledge, I have no idea how I'm supposed to do that yet. It's sort of adding this extra layer or two that goes above the sort of simple way it was handled in Skyrim.
Yeah.
That so far is sort of the part where I'm most frustrated, but otherwise I'm having a pretty easy time so far just taking on some of these quests, doing them, and just exploring a little bit. And sort of alongside that, I just dipped the smallest of toes into the new Elder Scrolls Skyrim Special Edition remastered thing.
Okay.
On a PC. I basically just got through the very beginning of the intro, sort of that ride, and yeah. Just stopped. So somehow I messed up my controller stuff so that it just stopped working. Like, well, that's a good reason to stop for now.
Yeah.
I just save and quit. So, that game, looking forward to playing some more of it, mess with the mods and such. Because now all that stuff is in-game instead of going through the Steam Marketplace, workshop stuff.
Yeah.
I haven't had much chance to look at it other than just wanted to sort of start it up and see if I could notice any difference from what I remember playing of the original version a few months ago. And I didn't notice anything that seemed all that different. But I don't have the greatest PC. I have like a 770 graphics card.
Yeah.
It's still telling me like I can do high for most of the settings. So it seems like they didn't put it out of reach for most of us more modest PC people.
Yeah.
Besides that, I'm still playing more PlayStation VR. I got videos for Res Infinite up now and Loading Human Chapter 1.
Yeah.
I put some screenshots of Loading Human in the chat for you guys to look at. So show you the way it kind of does body tracking a little bit. So like the move controllers are the hands, and your head affects the body as so. Ends up in some of this weird moments early on when you're in the little bathroom area, sort of able to pick up stuff and throw it around. I noticed that this guy has a monologue on almost every item in there. At a point, you just want him to shut up about stuff. Loading Human is kind of a neat little adventure game. I got a little bit of nausea just from the way the locomotion is handled and sort of the way that you're... generally, one of the move controllers, you push down the move button and your guy will move forward.
Yeah.
But if you twist it just enough to the left or the right, depending on which hand it is, you'll turn. And it sort of does the quick like flash to black and then over to the other side.
Yeah.
And I have problems in this video a little bit of trying to figure out because it kind of switches at a certain point. I don't know when it happened, but at some point the move forward button switched to the other hand. So I'm trying to move forward with the left hand is what I was thinking it was. And I keep turning and I'm like, what the hell? So you see me a lot in the video just like, okay, I'm going to go forward. No, wait, I'm facing the other way. Okay. And... I think in the video you'll notice when I take off the headset, because I want to see where I'm looking at. I'm like, oh, I'm looking over to the right. Or somehow I get twisted pretty easily. And that game is fun for the physics, because you can pick up a bunch of stuff and both of the rooms that you start out in are just messes.
Yeah.
So there's lots of stuff to pick up. You see me pick up books and just hurl them across the room, or bottles that seem like they're empty with booze. And I just throw them and see if they break. It's like, okay, that's fun.
Nice, and yeah, the video even gets,
yeah, and it eventually gets to the point where the power goes out. It's not supposed to be a horror game, so I just have a flashlight. I'm holding, moving around, and trying to get into this elevator to get to the area where I can turn on the power again.
Hmm.
And I lose the flashlight down the crack in the elevator, between the elevator and the floor. And it's like, I'm sitting here trying, like, oh, can I? Because you can kind of pick up stuff by kind of levitating it to you, as long as you can, like, get it to highlight purple.
Yeah.
I'm sitting there trying to get it. It's like, can I get the right angle to get... No, no flashlight for the rest of this. Nope. It's not that dark, but... it's a fun little game so far. Yeah, Res Infinite, I finished Area 5 and Area X. That game's still really good.
Hmm.
Definitely want to try out some of the more the side stuff that opens up.
Yeah.
Once you beat that stuff. But yeah, otherwise it's really good. Area X is a good hopeful sign for what a sequel can do.
Yeah.
That one is kind of weird because you can actually just freely move around. It's not on rails.
Okay.
So you're kind of where you're looking is where your guy's going to move, which gets a little bit weird when you're trying to look around for enemies you missed, and your guy just starts moving in that direction.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's still real good, and hoping to play a bit more and then probably do a review for that.
Yeah.
I think that's been largely it.
Hmm. So you've had PSVR for about 2 weeks or so, and yeah. You're still into it?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Bought a few more games since then that have come out and had pretty decent launch discounts, so looking forward to just sort of working my way through all the games I have.
Hmm.
Cool. Yeah.
Hmm. All right. So if you actually don't want to spend any money on games, we're at the end of the month, and that, of course, means the new PlayStation Plus and Games with Gold lineups are out. Yeah, you want to go through these? I had a look earlier, and nothing really caught my eye on any of them.
Okay, so for PlayStation Plus in November, for PS4, you essentially get four games. You get Everybody's Gone to the Rapture, which is the new game from the Chinese Room.
Mm-hmm.
Did the second Amnesia game and all that sort of first-person adventure stuff. I like that game. From what I played of it, I played like an hour or so.
Yeah.
That one's really cool about this English town, small English town that's just deserted.
Yeah.
You're kind of figuring out that something happened. Like either everybody got sent to heaven or something, or everybody died because there are bloody Kleenexes all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of a fun little thing to explore this town and sort of try and figure out what happened.
Yeah.
There's the Deadly Tower Monsters, which is from Ace Team of Xenoclash fame.
Yeah.
And it's is another one of their weird, silly games that is a third-person action game, brawler RPG thing.
Mm.
But it's all designed to be a B-tier movie, cheesy sci-fi thing from like the 50s.
Okay.
So everything looks real stop motion-y.
Yeah.
Mm.
And you can see some of the monsters are real cheap, like costumes, things like that. It's all the sort of classic sci-fi tropes you kind of wanted to make fun of. And along the way you have a narrator, kind of Bastion-like in a sense, though he's the director. So he's doing sort of director commentary. And I believe at some points he's like, oh, can we pause this? It's like, no.
It's going. It's live.
And as for the other PS4 stuff, there's Letter Quest Remastered, also crossed by with Vita.
Mm-hmm.
And that is kind of a sort of a puzzle Scrabble kind of puzzle RPG thing.
Yeah.
Maybe not so much RPG, but more definitely puzzle stuff. And there's Pumped BMX Plus, which is PS4, PS3, Vita, cross-buy. That is from... who is it? I forget who did that. Who published that? But that is a sort of Trials-esque BMX game.
Yeah.
Sort of side-scrolling, trying to string together tricks and such to get high scores and all that. Just have to worry about the physics and all that.
Hmm.
And yeah, that's published by Curve Digital, so they try and cross-buy their stuff all over all the consoles if they can.
Yeah.
Along with that is Dirt 3 for the PS3.
Yes.
Which is supposed to be a good rally racing game.
Yeah.
It's good. Costume Quest 2 is the other PS3 game, which is... from what I played on PS4, it's a really good follow-up. It sort of simplifies some of the costume stuff, but expands everything else.
Okay.
And less of a tedious combat system.
Yeah.
As for games with gold, let's see, available November 1st, you get Monkey Island Special Edition for XBLA and Xbox One.
Yeah.
Which is obviously a really well done remaster of that game.
Yeah.
On Xbox One, you get Super Dungeon Bros, which I tried to look up what this game was, because it kind of makes it seem like it might be sort of top-down action RPG,
yeah,
dungeon crawler thing, because it mentions loot in the description.
Yeah.
But then I looked at the screenshots, and it didn't necessarily throw any sort of like RPG sort of HUD stuff to it.
Yeah.
There's no HUD at all. So I don't know.
And again, the screenshots is kind of hard to tell. Sometimes they don't have
it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if it's just like co-op thing,
yeah,
co-op focus game, or if it's something like Diablo-esque.
Yeah.
I'm getting Gauntlet vibes.
Yeah, maybe. And they talk about like weekly dungeons and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I don't know. As for coming on November 16th, you get Murdered Soul Suspect on the Xbox One, which I've played a little bit of the PC version of that, and that's one of those like B-tier adventure games.
Yeah, I've heard it was just okay.
Yeah, it's pretty decent, then they add this dumb stealth stuff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They're kind of stealthing around ghosts,
yes,
which is... the least appetizing part of it's the story that's the most interesting part, where you are playing a detective who has been killed.
Mm.
Now he's trying to solve his own death as a ghost.
Mm. Mm.
And so he's able to sort of assess various crime scenes and such, trying to figure out what happened to him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And on Xbox 360 is Far Cry 3 Blood Dragon, which is a good spin-off of the original Far Cry 3 that is all about aping the 80s sci-fi action movie tropes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Where you play as, I forget what his name is. It's a real dumb name.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see the description here. It's a cyber shooter, like an 80s VHS vision of the future. You play Sergeant Rex Colt, a Mark IV cyber commando, who's fighting against the cyborg army gone rogue.
Hmm.
So you do all the Far Cry stuff of stealthing around, trying to mess with the AI enemies and a handful of creatures, especially the titular Blood Dragons.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm. That will just come and destroy stuff if you can get the AI fighting against them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which is pretty cool. And I guess it stars Michael Biehn of Terminator, Aliens, and Navy SEALs fame.
Mm-hmm.
He plays your main character. So that's a pretty good addition, though. Mm. For me, I have everything but the one new game.
Super Dungeon. I have most of those, too. So it's like...
It's like... These are all great when I got them a couple years ago.
Yeah.
So, yeah, pretty decent months for both.
But that is how your mileage may vary with these kinds of programs.
Yeah.
So, and if you don't have any of those, so go ahead and download them as they become available. PS Plus usually takes about a week before they show up, so.
Well, this should be up on Tuesday. Yeah. Since that's the first Tuesday of the month.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. So moving on, we've got a follow-on to last week's Nintendo Switch discussion.
Yeah. Apparently, the footage of games that we saw in the trailer either were entirely fabricated or just not representative of software that will be on the final product. In Nintendo's own words, you shouldn't assume that it contained actual game footage. So it kind of undercuts the whole trailer.
Yeah. It's disappointing, but in hindsight, we probably should have guessed that already.
Yeah, although, that's treading on shaky legal ground, because that trailer was shown worldwide and there are laws against that sort of thing in the UK, the EU.
Yeah.
We'll see how this lands.
Yeah, so bad, Nintendo. Bad.
Yeah.
Part of me thinks that the reason they made this trailer was just so people would stop bothering them.
Maybe, but...
And then it leaves them with more questions than answers.
Answers, I know. Yeah.
So, there has been a lot that's come out lately, which, may or may not be substantiated, like, the addition of the touchscreen, which isn't really that surprising.
I didn't take it for granted.
No, but, they've said January 12th, 2017 is when they'll reveal all, apparently, so... Yeah, that's to look forward to, I suppose.
They are really running down the clock on this.
Yeah, if they're going to launch in March, waiting until January 12th to get more info out, kind of cutting it close.
Giving us that teaser trailer and saying, we'll tell you more in 3 months.
Yeah.
Then it'll be out 2 months after that.
Yeah. We shall wait and see. God damn it, Nintendo! Why do you make it so hard to like you? Anyways, I'll keep an eye on that. Fuck off! Anyways,
so kids with you, stupid kids and your rockabilly 8-track record tapes.
Get off my lawn. So yeah, so Bethesda. Has finally made public their review policy, saying they don't send out early review copies anymore, joining Ubisoft, who no longer does that either.
2K.
And EA, who is very, very particular about who gets review copies.
Yeah.
This is another instance in a trend that is becoming very, very disconcerting to me.
Yeah.
Very anti-consumer, and... You look at the list of companies that are getting on board with it, and they're companies that kind of have a history of games coming in a little hot.
Yeah. Like, Bethesda, Ubisoft, 2K, EA. Yep.
Those are your usual suspects.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. And so at least it's nice that one of these publishers had the balls to make it public. So just being silent and just letting them dribble out, the day before launch at the earliest.
Yeah. But it basically means that reviews for games from any of these companies are basically worthless because they'll just, give the copies to the people that they think are going to, write positive reviews. Yep. So,
yep.
Yeah, that's great. Way to instill customer confidence.
Yeah, it's something that as customers you'll want to keep in the back of your mind as games are released.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And Skyrim Special Edition, when that came out, had a nasty audio bug.
Yeah.
Apparently on the PC and Xbox One versions, the audio compression is real bad. compared to
I will do my utmost to contain my surprise.
So it's like, oh, if you had the copies out earlier, people might have known to wait if they cared about that.
Yeah. It's like, cause,
now
you
people
know,
had to spend $60 to find that out.
Yeah, because, I mean, when you buy a game, why would you want the audio to sound good? I mean, nobody really wants that, do they?
Or worse than the original game.
Yeah. How do you manage to screw that up when you're using the same assets? I mean, really? Come on, guys. So, yeah, Bethesda, yeah. Well, at least you're upfront about it now. That doesn't mean that...
People can make their own decisions.
Yeah. So, in general, we kind of advise anybody to wait about 6 months before buying a Bethesda game anyway.
Yeah.
But, so, that just makes it more appropriate.
That's why it's good to have Best Buy's Gamers Club unlocked.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So that whenever reviews do come out, if you're necessarily waiting for them, you'll get your 20% off anyway.
Yep.
You just won't get whatever pre-order discount or pre-order bonuses there might be.
Yeah. Which, let's face it, pre-order bonuses are pretty, you know, crappy anyway, so.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you want to take us through this next one, Pat? Because we got some Street Fighter V news.
Yeah. People are still diligently data mining the PC version of Street Fighter V. And a couple of things have sort of trickled in from that. Most notably, the inclusion of two new spots on the character select screen, which makes perfect sense the way they've recently reorganized it. There are rumors that that one of the fighters will be an ice-wielding character named Icebon. I'm skeptical about that, personally. But I do think season one still has a little more to show off. And honestly, I would not be at all surprised to see Akuma, considering he's already got a Street Fighter V design and storyline.
Yeah.
So he's ahead of the curve as far as characters that aren't on the roster yet go.
Yeah.
Personally, the date that I'd be circling on the calendar is December 3rd and 4th.
Yeah.
It's PlayStation Experience / Capcom Cup.
Yeah.
And if there's going to be any kind of big announcement, that's where it's going to be.
Yeah. So we'll wait and see about that.
Let's hope they do something worth it, because Street Fighter V sales numbers are not doing well.
Yeah. Well, in this data mine, you know, stuff that we've been seeing, there have been, you know, entries for not one, but two arcade modes. So, yeah.
So both of our theories may be correct.
Yeah. you want to go over what those were? Because it has been a while for some people.
Well, yours was basically that they were going to give in and put a conventional arcade mode, you know, standard progression ladder into the game.
Yeah.
Mine was that they were going to put something in with a whole bunch of conditional matches, kind of like Edgemaster mode and Soul Calibur.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
With conditions that would inherently hone a player's skills.
Yeah.
And thereby also serving the purpose of preparing them to play against other humans.
Yeah.
Which has been their MO since they launched the game.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I would speculate that that is what falls under the arcade prototype item.
Yeah. Yeah. I had also like speculated that maybe the arcade prototype is more of a Virtua Fighter style arcade progression. Like,
yep.
actual arcades, which would also be pretty cool.
It would also serve that purpose, too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Especially
it would
if
solve
they,
their AI problem.
Yeah, especially if they cross-populate it with the actual arcade data from the arcade edition that's going to be coming out in not too long. So,
which is going to be PC-based anyway, so...
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Everything's going to be designed to talk to each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
yeah, the craziness that I was talking to you on online about was actual crossplay between the arcade version and the PS4 version. Yeah. But
there were issues with that that I don't think would get sorted out. It would be interesting if they did. Hmm. But my main argument there was that I just that I would be kind of salty giving up quarters playing against somebody who was sitting at home playing for free.
Yeah. Plus, I don't think people playing in the arcade would be tolerant of any kind of lag.
It's true.
Yeah.
So. You go to the arcade to get away from that shit.
Yeah. Good news anyway, and we'll see how it develops, whether this is, an addendum to Season 1 or just an early look at Season 2. We'll have to wait and see.
Those two extra spots on the select screen mean something.
Yeah. Yeah, speaking of arcades, well, SNK Arcade Archives are going to be increasing on the PS4.
Yep.
Yep.
We've got King of Fighters 94 already. And then apparently they're looking at having 8 games by year's end.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, they got Metal Slug, Samurai Showdown, Alpha Mission 2, Fatal Fury, World Heroes for the end of the year, by the end of the year.
Yeah.
Then early next year is Neo Turf Masters and NOMS 1975.
Yeah. Mm. And, you know, so these aren't very hard for them to do, so.
No.
They'll just.
And, of course, as they always do, they start from the very beginning.
Yeah.
Mm.
So we still have to wait for Metal Slug 2 and Metal Slug X.
Yeah.
3, 4.
5.
I think Metal Slug X is still on PSN for PS3.
Yeah.
Hmm.
But I like this. We've already got The Last Blade and that on the KOF 2000 on the PS4. Yeah. So, you know, it's good stuff to see.
And Garo Mark of the Wolves is coming as its own release.
Yeah.
And I think King of Fighters 2000 is up there.
That's there.
So we're going to get all the years up there.
Yeah.
And you get confused which one's still good.
Yeah.
And you got 14...
If you're at all apprehensive about playing a good King of Fighters game, the only ones I would really ignore would be 94 and 95.
Mm.
I don't think those are at all palatable to any but the most hardcore audiences. Yeah. 96 was where they really started getting their shit together.
Yeah, 94 was basically where they introduced the format, and, you know,
it was make of it what you will.
Yeah.
I wish they could get 94 Rebound on there.
Yeah. Mm. I'm so sure that was actually they will. Since I think there is a PC version of that. So.
Huh.
Sorry. So, we'll see. All right. I think we talked about the voice actors.
Yep.
Yep.
Was it last week or the week before?
Yeah, we did last week. The SAG-AFTRA, basically the... wing of the Screen Actors Guild that represents the voice actor community in video games.
Yep.
Basically decided to go on strike.
Yep.
And they are currently on strike as of this moment. And as you would expect, the major video game companies have decided to retaliate. So they have started putting up their own website. They're basically doing pretty much anything they can to slander SAG-AFTRA and try and make themselves out to be the good guys in this situation.
Because, of course, they
yeah, of course, this is coming from, you know, companies like EA and 2K and Ubisoft. And
usual suspects.
Yeah.
The ones we just mentioned earlier. Being
skeezy. Are you noticing a pattern here?
Yeah.
So...
Yeah. So once again, I want to point out exactly why the voice actors are striking. They want a raise in wages because their wages haven't gone up in years. They want residuals for their work because unlike regular actors, voice actors in the gaming industry do not get residuals for their work.
Mm-hmm.
And they also want... better, you know, working conditions and vacation times because, as we've mentioned before, being a voice actor ain't no joke. It's a surprisingly strenuous work environment.
Especially when he gets more motion capture being part of that.
Yeah. So, you know, basically what the main complaint that the video game companies are making is that, according to them, the leaders of the union did not, according to them, consult enough with their members before the strike.
Okay.
I'm
not sure I really believe that, given that they've been talking about this for 2 years or more.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
God, AAA gaming industry, why do you suck?
Yeah. So,
this is a normal part of, like, union bargaining, is both sides take shots at the other.
Yeah basically.
To make them out to be the perfect gentleman.
Yeah.
No, both of their shit stinks.
Yeah. So basically I just want to point out this is usually how labor disputes, not just in the US, but basically anywhere goes.
Yeah.
Now you also have to remember that in the United States especially, unions do not have as much of a oomph or legal power as they once used to.
Yeah.
Thanks to late President Ronald Reagan.
Hmm.
So that makes labor disputes in the U.S. especially arduous and nasty.
Yeah.
You know, the thing you always have to remember about labor disputes is that when they happen, all bets are pretty much off.
Yeah.
They're not resolved in the court of public opinion, but yet for some reason they always fucking end up there.
Yeah. There is going to be, it's going to get intense. Things are going to be said. Actions are going to be taken.
Yep.
Hopefully it will not get to the point where, you know, there will be scab labor or busing in scab labor. And then, you know, that means folks are going to have to come in and slash the bus tires or kneecaps are going to get broken or anything like that. But
yeah.
You think I'm joking, but that shit's happened before.
Yeah.
Oh, I know.
Because again, when labor happens, that is the front line.
Yeah.
Shit goes down.
Yeah.
So, you know, obviously I still have my solidarity with the voice actors and their union. I support their struggle. And, you know, the AAA game folks can go eat a bag of dicks. So,
you're here to that.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not going to be as fun as the Simpsons episode where the union stuff happened.
No.
Yeah.
Lisa needs braces. Dan all plan.
Yeah. So, all right. Yeah, moving on from that unpleasantness. So we got some more info on Final Fantasy XV, in particular one of the items of the season pass, which is going to be an online co-op mode.
And Pat is still not interested.
Well, this just kind of shows that I don't really understand what a JRPG is. So, yeah, it's just another example of why we don't care about this game at all.
Mm.
I'd like to hear what Pat has to say on this one, though.
I was just going to let it land with a thud. I mean, Final Fantasy XV has really become the Dacia Sandero of the Day Zero update.
No!
And I don't know how I would say about online co-op's place in general in JRPGs, because there are some games that I could actually see it being quite enjoyable in that genre. But I have complete and utter apathy toward Final Fantasy XV. I want to get on the other side of it as quickly as possible so we can see whatever is going to come next from Square Enix, because I'm just writing off this entire portion of the franchise off as totaled.
Yeah.
Mm.
So,
well, Final Fantasy XV is a very much representative of just sort of the changes that were happening in Square.
Yeah.
at the time. It was sort of during its sort of downtrend of its what I like to call the Hollywood phase, because they basically got it into their heads that they were not just video game producers, but they were on par with the big Hollywood movie producers and acted like it.
Yeah, they did.
And, well, you know, now they've gotten, you know, new blood into the company, and they're sort of readjusting their outlook.
Yeah.
But so, and Final Fantasy XV really is kind of representative of that.
Yeah.
It's like, every aspect of it has pieces of that, you know, that particular
time. It's got
time.
That DNA.
Yeah. I mean, it's still got Nomura's stank all over it.
Yeah.
I mean, this game started very early on in the PS3's.
I mean, this thing
cycle,
is...
So it's been around for
I mean, it was originally a spinoff of 13. Yeah. So, I mean...
So go figure. Yeah, but, you know, Square Enix, at least one part of it, seems to actually know what we want, and they've mentioned that they're going to be going all in on Dragon Quest releases in the West.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
If Lee were here, he'd be jumping up and down, but his microphone exploded, so we'll just...
we hope for his return sooner than later.
Yeah.
We'll see how his warranty treats him.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, it's too bad they didn't realize this before they made the big long delays for the 3DS remasters.
Yeah.
And
had to get
being
Nintendo
said, with
involved.
With what's in the pipeline already in the way of Dragon Quest games, what is left to go all in on?
9 remastered?
9 was already a DS game. I don't see them revisiting it that soon unless it's on Switch.
Mm. No, I'd prefer to have it on PS4.
Gonna have 11 coming out,
yeah,
some point next year. Hopefully,
I don't think they'll bring 10 over. That's
10 that kind of run its course.
Yeah.
And
as far as the MMOs go, they seem to be very committed to Final Fantasy 14.
Yeah,
justify it absolutely.
Mm.
Well, we'll see how it goes. And I mean, if it means that future Dragon Quest games that they develop are just gonna end up here as a matter of course, then that's even better.
Grease those wheels.
Yeah,
Builders was pretty successful from what all the feedback has been.
Yeah.
And, you know, we won't have to worry about all the, you know, the redressing and recostuming that they did when it was called Dragon Warrior.
Yeah.
Yep.
So we get all that sweet Toriyama artwork.
Yeah. That's good stuff. And then more Square Enix news.
Your mileage may vary.
Yeah. I mean, Danrim's going to be happy about this. All of the Kingdom Hearts games will be available on the PS4. Yeah, good, if you like.
Does that include Kingdom Hearts 3?
Well, yeah. Kingdom Hearts 3 will eventually be coming out on the PS4. But 328.17.
Technically, that game doesn't exist yet.
Yeah.
Until it's out.
Yeah, until it's out.
But you can play the 7, 8, 9 games. There's that 2.8 final chapter prologue HD that's coming out in January. And they're doing the 5 or 6 games that came with 1.5 and 2.5 all in one bundle. So that's it's actually a pretty good deal.
I'm just a hair north of apathetic about Kingdom Hearts as a franchise, but the completist in me just it is just happy about this.
Yeah.
You can buy all of them and then not play them.
Yeah, I'll wait for a sale by all of them.
Close to the truth.
Yeah,
for as much as that's going to really matter by the time 3 comes out.
Yeah. Yeah, 3 is a bit of a wild card at this point, but, you know, if they're committing to a date for those, maybe that's also kind of the stealth date for Kingdom Hearts 3 that they're not actually committing to, but maybe will be. You know,
we don't imagine the limited edition they could pull off if that's the case.
Yeah, massive box of stuff.
Just
here's all
the Kingdom Hearts perfect collection.
Yeah. Yeah. I really want to see stuff like that happen in this generation.
Yes.
But we, you know, big box anthologies are pretty common in, you know, TV shows and anime and all that stuff. But you don't really see it in the gaming biz too much. It
tends to be spread out along many platforms that prohibits that.
Yeah.
Like we had that Metal Gear Solid Collection. It's like, oh, it's just 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, like, is it? I wanted to ask, as far as, like, game collections, does anybody have a personal favorite? Like, well, one of those, like, you know, Sega's greatest hits or one of those things.
That Sonic Genesis collection was pretty good.
That was, yeah, Sonic's Ultimate Genesis collection.
Yeah.
Yeah. 360 yeah, that PS3. Was, that's that was an excellent stuff. One to get. I like, what do I like? Well, all of the Namco museums on the PS1 were great.
Yes.
Yeah, the Metal Gear Solid Saga collection, I think.
That was not bad.
Yeah.
That was pretty good.
That's personal. I'll tell you what. Go ahead.
It was a Phantasy Star collection on the Japanese PS2 that I liked.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, we all have to remember, you know, Super Mario All-Stars. That's,
That kind of got the ball rolling on the whole thing.
Yeah. I'll tell you what my personal favorite was. It was the, I can't remember quite what the exact name was, but it was the Sonic Classics Collection on, I think it was the GameCube.
Sonic Gems.
It was all of the, you know, Sonic 1 through 3, as well as Sonic and Knuckles.
Was this the one that included CD and Sonic Fighters?
Yep.
Yep. Also, Sonic Spinball. It also had Robotnik's Mean Bean Machine. And the reason I loved this was because, well, first off, it was the first time I got to play, you know, all of the original Sonic games to completion.
Yeah.
Because I didn't have a Genesis growing up.
Yeah.
And also, it was because it had all of the covers for the Archie Sonic comics.
Nice.
Yeah. And it also had Ristar as a hidden bonus once you completed all of the other games that unlocked it.
Yeah.
Which I'm surprised didn't become a franchise unto itself.
Yeah.
Was it the Mega Man collection on GameCube that had the controls reversed? It's like A and B were the wrong buttons.
Oh my god.
Yeah, I think it was the GameCube. Because I remember not
it's like the one thing you have to get right, or you have two buttons.
Yeah.
No, we just got them wrong.
And you couldn't remap them. That was a problem. So, yeah. Anyways.
Oh, my God.
You had one job.
I can't
job.
Even imagine trying to... Yeah, I can't imagine trying to play those with the buttons reversed. That's...
You had one job, Capcom.
Yeah. So, anyways.
As far as favorite collections go, I'd probably have to say Street Fighter Alpha Anthology.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, that had 1 through 3, didn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And Super Gem Fighter.
Mm-hmm.
And a new sort of mishmash version of Alpha 3 that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
There was a lot to that set.
Oh, yeah.
I'd have to throw a note in on Kirby's Dream Collection on the Wii.
Mm.
Included, Dreamland Adventure, Dreamland 2, Superstar, Dreamland 3, and Crystal Shards, Kirby 64.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, Nintendo I never really found a copy of that anytime I had money.
Yeah.
Yeah, as I've learned with Kirby games, you either buy them at launch or you never see them again.
Yep.
Because they go out of print real fast.
Yeah. Or you spend $300 for them on eBay.
Thanks.
Let's not do that.
Nintendo needs to, with the Switch, just put out, like, here's the Kirby collection, here's all 10 Kirby games, whatever, 15 or 20, even if you want to throw in the GBA and DS stuff. Sort of, here's all of it. Same for Metroid and Mario and all that. Just make it $60, so you can go probably 80 for some of the games you might throw into those collections.
Yeah.
Just make them big special edition stuff.
Yeah.
So I think the Kirby one included like an episode of the show, a few episodes, like this big in-game like museum told you information about the games and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
When you had the re-release of the Mario All-Stars thing. It's like, here's the manual, here's the disc. Good luck.
Yeah. So, it was here's a menu, and that's all you got.
Like a beautiful collector's edition, and the disc contained what could have amounted to a virtual console release.
It's just a ROM. 20-year-old ROM.
Yeah. Yeah. Basically, what we're saying is, like, we want actual, you know, really good, well-thought-through compilations.
Yes.
With lots of bonus materials.
Yeah. Like that rare collection, for example.
Yes.
Hey, Street Fighter's 30th anniversary is next year.
Yeah.
So, hey.
It should be the equivalent of, like, the... what am I thinking of? Like, the DVD collections we see where it's, like, here's this elaborate box set with, like, the Turtles van.
Yeah.
With all the old Turtles show stuff.
Yeah. That's totally what we want.
You can charge $150 and people will pay.
You'll get it. Yep.
Just don't print, like, 500,000 copies of it.
No. Yeah. So moving on, Evolve. Developer Turtle Rock is stepping down. And 2K is apparently taking over.
Yeah, because let's be honest, that game just did not deliver at all.
Yeah, but I find this kind of strange, though, because the game had gone free-to-play, and Turtle Rock seems like they were actually starting to turn it around.
Yeah.
And now they're not working on it anymore.
Nope.
2K can probably save some money just by doing internal instead of paying these guys to keep doing all what they're doing.
Yeah.
It's strange because the thing is, Evolve was like super duper hyped during its development.
Yeah.
The Left 4 Dead team is
making a new co-op shooter thing.
Yeah. And it just did not deliver. There just wasn't really that much content to speak of.
There wasn't that much content. There were microtransactions up the wazoo. Yeah, it basically had everything going against
it. The over-reliance on teamwork.
Yeah.
In an era where most people just want to play, not talk to people.
Yeah.
Doesn't care about teamwork, really.
Yeah.
Right.
So, sad to see, but, this is one of those things. We were mentioning one of the... symptoms of the AAA gaming industry being skeezy. Well, this is kind of one of them.
Yeah,
this happens when
usual suspects.
Yeah,
and this happens with this sort of thing where you have an independent studio who essentially gives up the IP to the publisher, and then they get to
don't ever do that.
Take it where they want.
Yeah,
don't ever do that.
Most don't have the choice.
Yeah.
That's how we had United Front Games go down.
Yeah,
because Square Enix had full control and said, here, work on this free-to-play thing that doesn't have anything to do with what people liked about the original. Sleeping Dogs.
Yeah.
Instead of doing the sequel that people wanted.
Yeah. Alright. So moving on, we got, on Wednesday, Microsoft had their Surface announcement. And amongst the announcements of the Windows 10 Creators Update and the Surface Book Refresh and the Surface Studio All-in-One, was a little bit of a note about them working on their own VR headsets that would cost around $300.
That's a nice price point.
Yeah.
You know,
this news kind of fell through the cracks with the Surface announcement.
Yeah.
They didn't really say much about it, though.
No, they didn't linger on it. But...
It's like there's no external tracking needed.
Yeah,
it's all internal.
Sensors are all internal to the headset, which is probably how they should have done it to begin with. Just saying.
It looks like the PlayStation VR headset.
Yeah, it looks a little bit. It's going to be
it's like a headband with the actual screen sort of hanging down from it.
Yeah, although that's one model. I mean, if it's going to be built by various vendors, so each of them might have their own take on it. But the basic premise is going to be the same. But
it seems like this was how they are making HoloLens more affordable.
Yeah, well, this won't typically... This is not going to be HoloLens. I mean,
it has some of the same aspects of it from what they've shown.
Yeah, I mean, it will be able to run the HoloShell, so there's that. But yeah, it's good. I mean,
and it has, like, hand gestures and voice commands as sort of key control points.
Yeah. And it gets, PC VR down into the same price point as PS VR, which is, I think, going to be very important going forward.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
And now it's going to be a race to the bottom for Oculus and HTC.
yeah, who have already said, well, Oculus has already said they're working on something more mid-range. So, yeah, we'll see how that goes.
Hmm.
So this might be what is the VR solution for Scorpio. The Scorpio.
Yeah.
Instead of just saying, hey, Oculus, we like your stuff.
Yeah.
Sell it to us.
Well, 2017, we'll be seeing more of this.
Yeah, it's kind of weird they're treating this like laptops. Mm. Here's the specs for the OS and all that.
Yeah.
Make your thing.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's typical Microsoft, though.
They're good at that.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully, like the HP and Dell and all these other companies don't make crappy headsets.
Yeah.
Nope.
Make people get sick.
Yeah.
Just for that $300.
Mm.
$300 and up, at least.
Yeah. Yes. Moving on from that, we got a little bit of an announcement on MLB The Show 17.
So this was exciting.
World Series.
Yeah.
They got their World Series announcement out there that's coming out on March 28th. And the cover athlete is going to be Hall of Famer Ken Griffey Jr.
Yeah.
And that's real exciting because the past few cover athletes have been not really bad, but nobody really cares.
Yeah.
So this is sort of like the Michael Jordan announcement for NBA 2K when they said, hey, we're going to put a player that's real exciting, one of the classics, as a Cleveland Indians fan. Ken Griffey Jr. was my favorite baseball player of the 90s.
Yeah.
Which is crazy, but he was that good.
I just think it's interesting that Ken Griffey Jr. in 2017 is going to be a cover athlete on a Sony-produced baseball game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. Well, it's kind of... It makes sense. I mean, given that MLB The Show is pretty much the only game in town when it comes to baseball at this point.
But he was, like, synonymous with Nintendo for so many years.
Yeah, we had
it. It's just one of those quirks from having played these games way back.
Yeah.
That seems interesting in hindsight.
And Nintendo kind of had a little bit of an advantage being at least part owner of the whole team.
So it wasn't...
Now they've kind of sold most of their stock in that.
Yeah.
And, they're going to be having... let's see, they're going to have some special editions, I think from $60 up to $100, depending on what you want to pay, but the steelbooks look real cool. It's sort of a replica of the jersey wears. Mm. So it's got the nice like front with his signature on it and the game logo on the back. It says Griffey and 24, and it looks real great. So I might grab like the $70 version of that just to have that.
Yeah. See, we like nice packaging, guys.
Yes.
Do that. Do more.
Yeah, they've
that.
Done some great ones for MLB The Show.
Yeah.
And I have one that's like, I want to say like it's wood bat colored.
Yeah.
So it kind of has that like nice little look to it that just looks great.
Mm.
And it's real cool to have that sort of player on the cover.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
See, I've never bought a collector's edition of MLB The Show, but this could be the one.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, they throw, a bunch of themes for pretty much every team.
Yeah.
So you can put your own teams on there. A bunch of in-game stuff. Not really anything amazing, but the cover is the thing that's really cool.
Yeah. So, yeah. And the games have been solid for the past few years, so.
Yep.
Yeah. Rumors are still, abounding that EA might get back into the baseball arena, but that's never
they did it well.
Itself. Yeah.
Not after NBA Live, how that went.
Yeah, that didn't go so good.
The market isn't really there for starting from scratch.
Yeah.
Unless you just go all out with the money and just sink as much as you can.
Well, EA's got the money. I mean, they could do it, but it's whether they want to or not. So.
Or take a couple of years to get started.
Yeah. Yeah. So moving on from that, we got the last show and probably the strangest thing I've seen all week.
Yeah.
Okay.
Go ahead and explain it, because...
you put this on there?
This was a Teresa story, but she wasn't available to be on the show today.
Tell you what, I'll go ahead and talk about it real quick. Okay.
There's a lot to it.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is what it was. It's from CNN Money. It says here, when developer Aaron Stanton first heard that a woman had been groped while playing his virtual reality game, his heart sank. The woman, Jordan Bellemeyer, was shooting zombies alongside strangers in Quivir when another player virtually rubbed her chest and shoved his hand, quote, in quotes, toward her virtual crotch. I knew this was going to happen.
I'm surprised it took that long, but yeah. The thing of it is, if you've seen the screenshots for this game, it makes me wonder. It's kind of a stretch because the characters don't really have bodies.
Yeah.
It's just kind of a bow floating around.
Yeah. But, it happened, apparently.
Yeah. The important thing, you know, that I got from this is she genuinely felt this way. You know, if you're in that world and you're playing that game and you're immersed, things like, you know, the fact that there's, you know, no real arms or legs or genitalia or facial expression or anything like that, kind of goes by the wayside because you believe that you're there.
Yeah.
If you believe that you're
it's the other side of the immersion coin.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and this guy came up and started getting too close and violating her personal space. And, you know, if anybody's ever stepped up to you, you know, it's kind of uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. So I'm not one of those people who thinks she's like a super feminist and all of that. I think there's something genuinely there.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I'm not too thrilled about the fact that, you know, Brianna Wu ended up getting involved in this and basically kind of threatening, you know, governments should really start regulating VR. Really? No. But,
Always happens. There's all, you know.
This is why we can't have nice things.
Yeah.
Because somebody is always going to be a jerk.
Yeah.
But the developer's reaction to this, I think, was actually, you know, pretty spot on.
Yeah, even though you don't have like an actual virtual representation of your body, you're still seeing everything from a first person perspective, which is a crazy thing that somebody would spend, you know, the $800 plus the PC and all that just to do this.
It's funny, because even though you don't have haptics or anything like that as of yet, I'm willing to bet that you really start to feel what's going on in there. You know, so I don't see this as outrageous or anything like that. I think there's genuine merit to this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But I mean, this, let's be honest.
There is intent. And that's, and that matters.
Yeah.
I mean, let's be honest here. This was going to happen eventually.
Oh, yes, this was totally going to happen. I'm glad it happened sooner rather than later.
Yeah. So now we can all
admit
that there's a problem, and we can actually do stuff, take steps to prevent it.
Yeah.
I mean, you and I, we've both read Ready Player One. We know they talk about stuff like that in there.
Yeah.
You know, this is going to happen. And, you know, there's going to be some growing pains.
Yeah.
At first. And, so, yeah.
Yeah, people underestimate the immersiveness that VR has to it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, and some people are saying, like, well, you could always just take the headset off. Yeah, and sure, you could. But that doesn't solve the problem.
Yeah, you shouldn't have to.
Yeah.
So I want to say he was going to do something to the effect of, like, giving people superpowers to be able to deal with this sort of stuff.
Yeah, like some kind of gesture or something that you could do. Or I'm not entirely sure how that's going to actually end up working out, but
yeah,
it's, you know, something that they're going to have to actually look into now.
It's something that needs solved, and I'm just kind of glad that I'm not one of the people who has to come up with a solution, because I don't know how it would work. I don't know how I would go about tackling that.
I mean, you know, we've had in, for years, in first-person shooters, we've had teabagging.
Yeah.
Translate that to VR.
Oh, God.
So, you know, this is really something that that does have to be solved, because, yeah, nobody would want to get teabagged in VR. I'm just saying.
No.
Yeah, I guess I'm seeing an article here. It says he was working that morning when he saw the article to release an update that lets you extend the personal bubble so that players getting close to you fade out.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. They could do that, or they could just have the bubble just kind of be a repulsion bubble. Boom. Off. You know, there's ways to solve this, and
I think it largely depends on the game, too.
Yeah, I mean, there's...
Yeah.
A game like this that's supposed to be about teamwork, you kind of really don't want to be moving the players around all the time. But so, if they just kind of disappear, then they disappear. Yeah. and both players wouldn't see each other's. That would end up sorting it out. So yeah, I think that's about... that's a very strange way to end the show with a mental image of teabagging in VR.
Yeah.
So yeah. Anyways, you can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Google Play, TuneIn Radio. Moving right along. And your favorite podcast aggregator. So with that, I am Filippo Genolfo.
I'm Patrick Mifflin.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
And I'm Chris Elogi.
And we'll see you guys next week.
Happy Halloween.